Well, good afternoon, everyone. So, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit in the chapters of the movie, or I'm sorry, the book, Cruel Sacrifice, that I've been reading, because mostly it's just explaining how the four girls kind of grew up, and I can explain that to you without going through, you know, basically like 50 pages. So, if you all remember, Melinda Loveless was kind of the leader of this group. She was the one that had the idea to kill Sandra. So her background was, she came from obviously a very abusive childhood. Her dad was completely a creep, molested her and her sisters, and beat up her mother several times to a point where he put her in the hospital. So she did have some weird childhood things go on. That doesn't excuse, you know, her doing what she did. Lori Tackett, they go into detail. There was no real abuse. It was just, she was always a very, depressed child. Her mother was, very into the church and tried to get her to go. I think it was, either Pentecostal or, oh man, something like that. But you get the gist of it. It was a very churchy type of environment to live in. And because Lori had always had mental issues, you know, her mom basically was just very cruel to her. Didn't believe her a lot. Lori liked to make up stories to try to get people's attention. And so that's what they kind of delve into in these chapters that I'm kind of skipping over just because I honestly don't want to go through it. So I'm just going to skip ahead. So right now, we are going to chapter 10. So let's go. So chapter 10. When Sandra Shar moved to New Albany with her mom in the summer of 1991, she was the one who insisted on going to public school. She was tired of wearing uniforms, she said. She had attended St. Paul Catholic School in Louisville for years, and she was ready for a change of pace. Sandra Shar was just like so many other 12-year-olds in America. She liked going to the mall, talking on the phone, and meeting boys. She was a sensitive girl who didn't like to hurt anyone's feelings, who was loved dearly by both her parents and her step-parents. Her older half-sister, Paige, had been more of a disciplinarian problem growing up, but not Sandra. By her mother's own admission, Paige was someone who got punished a number of times, but with Sandra, that kind of thing was never necessary. She was an easygoing kid. Sandra liked to help people, and she had made big plans for the future. She wanted to become a nurse, just like her older sister. Still, it was a tough time for her. She was a bit nervous about the transition to the public school system, and on top of everything, her mother, Jackie, was going through her third divorce. Sandra's parents had already married and divorced twice, and the child was filled with mixed emotions. On August 1st, 1991, Sandra sat down and wrote down some of her fears and hopes. Dear Diary, I can't believe it, but it's true. It's time for the new school year. Let me tell you what I'm looking forward to the most and what I'm dreading the most. Well, this year I'm going to a different school. I'm sort of scared. I won't fit in because I heard that there are hoods, pretty girls, and all those guys. I wish my mom would understand that I don't want to be 12. I want to be 13. I wish I could tell people I was 13 and my mom would go along with that, but I know how my mom is. She's not that kind of person, but I would love it if she would. I would work hard, but I'm already going to do that. I love my mom very much, but she doesn't understand how much I want to be 13 and have people spend the night on school nights and talk on the phone past 10 o'clock. Love, Sandra. Sandra liked to dress as a teenager, and because she was already well-developed, she fooled most people. Her mother let her wear makeup and tight jeans, nothing too outrageous, nothing really that many of the girls her age hadn't already begun experimenting with. But Sandra wanted to date. Sandra wanted to be treated like an adult. Her mother wouldn't allow it. I wish I could go out with anybody, she wrote in a diary. I wish I could live with my dad and have as much fun as possible. Sandra spent weekends with her dad, during which time she had a bit more freedom. In late August, when Sandra arrived at Hazelwood Junior High, she was a cute blonde with a beautiful smile and a good grade point average. At St. Paul, Sandra had been involved in all kinds of sports, basketball, softball, gymnastics, and cheerleading. She was the typical all-American girl. She had even been a Girl Scout. But Sandra's Girl Scout image was something that she quickly shed when she entered the mix at Hazelwood, and it was shown in every facet of her life. For one thing, she didn't go out for sports. All of that ended, in part because her grades had dropped. She was too preoccupied with other things. Sandra had attracted a lot of attention from both boys and girls, particularly Amanda. "Why are you staring at her?" Melinda would ask out in an outraged tone. Melinda couldn't stand the idea that Amanda found Sandra attractive. Melinda started to make fun of Sandra in the lunchroom, picking on her in front of everyone. Even her cousin Lisa witnessed it. "I ate lunch with Melinda one day, and she was, like, being mean to her. She was just making fun of her hair. She was saying, 'Look at her boobs,'" Lisa recalls. Shonda had gotten in trouble or something, and she was cleaning tables. Whenever she would clean another table, Melinda was making fun of her, calling her ugly girl and stuff like that. Because she thought she was trying to take Amanda away from her, she just made it known that she didn't like her. Around the same time, Amanda saw her cousin, Nathan, arguing with Shonda in one of the hallways, and she jumped in to break up the fight. Amanda and Shonda wound up having to spend a week in in-school suspension. ISS, the girls called it. On September 6th, Melinda purposely was tardy so she could be put in ISS too. She told Margie that she had to stay after school to help decorate for a party. But after just a few days in detention together, even though Melinda tried to intervene, the two girls became friends. Amanda apologized to Sandra, telling her to call her anytime, handing her phone number in one of her first letters to Sandra. Apparently, Sandra did call repeated times, even though it was against her mother's wishes. Sandra's mother would later tell Indianapolis magazine that she did not approve of Amanda, that she thought Amanda was a boy when she first saw her. "I told Sandra that this was not the type of person she needed to be with," Jackie later said in an interview, "but Sandra had no friends there, so I decided to give the kid a chance." Sandra and Amanda exchanged lists of their class schedules with each other, making plans to meet in the cafeteria or in the hallway between classes. Amanda told Sandra that she had no locker partner and asked Sandra to slip her any notes she might write through the locker vents. She eventually asked for the combination to Sandra's locker, seducing the 12-year-old with a succession of letters and gifts. In one of the earliest letters to Sandra, whose name she couldn't even spell correctly at first, she hints around about being a lesbian. September 13th, 1991. Sandra. That's how she spelled it. "Sorry, I didn't call. I forgot. Could you give me your number and your classes again, please? Hey, so how do you like ISS? I guess it's okay. I don't want you to think I'm a bad person or anything. I don't like to fight. I hate fighting. It's just when I had you on the ground getting ready to hit you, I couldn't because you looked so helpless down there. But then you swung at me, so I started hitting and you started pulling my hair. Well, I'm laying in bed about 10 o'clock p.m. Time for me to go to bed. Listen, okay, Sandra, I know the way you are now. Either you're putting an act on me and saying that you like me, or you're putting an act on for your friends. You act so different around your friends than you do with me. What's up? You're so nice to me. Please tell me, because friends just don't tell me their classes for the hell of it. So there's got to be a reason. I have a question to ask you. I know this is going to sound dumb, but do you kind of in a way like girls? If so, I think it's cool because it's different. Is that why you're so nice to me? Do you think I'm cute or something? Please tell me the truth. I won't laugh because I think it's cool. Your friend, Amanda H. P.S. Tell me if you do because I really like to know. Melinda said she asked you about that, but you said it was cool, and you wrote me and said it's nice. Please tell me. Footnote. The letters written by Melinda, Amanda, and Sandra included here were taken from court documents. At around the same time, Melinda wrote her first warning to Sandra. She was concerned, and she was trying, in a friendly way, to dissuade her. Sandra, don't be mad at me, please. I want to be your friend. I just don't like when you speak to Amanda when I'm not there. I mean, why can't we all three be friends? You act as if you got something going on with her. Amanda and I are going together, she loves me, and I love her, and she only wants to be friends with you. You need to accept that. Sandra, Amanda told me you're going through bad times. Well, if you need someone to talk to, you can always talk with me. I don't want you sneaking behind my back. Why don't you speak to Amanda when she's with me? You need to find you a boyfriend because Amanda is mine. You can even ask her. Please talk to both of us or you can forget about Amanda. You and Amanda need to have a talk together and get this squared away. Then we can all be friends. Sorry I'm writing so sloppy. Can you meet me? Can you meet us at lunch? Your friend, Mel. Apparently, the three of them did talk, but nothing was resolved. Just days later, Amanda wrote Sandra a letter filled with sexual innuendo. September 16th, 1991. Sandra. Hey, girlfriend, what's up? Please don't let Melinda bother you. Please don't stop liking me because of her. I tried to call you about 3 times, but your mom said you couldn't talk. I said, okay, thanks. I was wondering, do you still like me? If so, I'm glad. I have a lot in store Friday or Saturday, something you've been talking about for a while. Do you know what I mean? I'm just joking, or do you want me not to joke? Do you want to happen what I've got in store? If so, answer back yes, if I see you Friday or Saturday, okay? So how you and Ray doing? I saw you all walking in the halls, holding hands, kissing each other. Goodbye. I walked behind you yesterday to Mrs. Walker's room last yesterday. Well, gotta go. Love, Amanda. P.S. I think I'm starting to like someone. You know her. As evidence in the mid-September notes, Sandra was spending a lot of time flirting with her male friend Ray, yet at the same time, she was claiming to be interested in Amanda. Ultimately, Amanda broke down and wrote to Sandra trying to determine whether to pursue the issue for real. Sandra, hey, I'm in band 6, and I saw you today coming out from fire drill. I thought you looked very cute. Listen, Saturday maybe we can work something out, like you meet me somewhere and we'll hang out. I'll talk to you about it. Love, Amanda. P.S. Yes, I will flirt. Will I have sex or make love with you? That's a big question for a little girl. Can you back up your word? Amanda wasn't sure what to think. She verbalized her puzzlement in a letter written to Sandra on September 19th. I still can't believe all that stuff you said. Like you wanted to kiss me, have sex, well, love with me, God. The reason I always leave you when you're with Ray is because I get jealous. Later, Amanda wrote a list of questions for her, asking Sandra if she was serious about wanting to kiss, if she wanted to start a relationship. Do you want to have sex with me? Is that what you want? Amanda felt like she was caught in the middle of a web. She was torn between two girls. She wasn't sure that Sandra really cared about her. At the same time, she knew Melinda loved her, but her girlfriend was just too overbearing and possessive. Melinda was already beginning to threaten to leave her. Amanda, why did you write her fucking name on your folder? It hurts so much when I saw it. I didn't think you would put her ugly name on your folder, and you wrote it. You must have liked her enough to write her name. Well, I'm gone. Melinda. P.S. Just tell me you like her, because I want to know. Amanda was spending a lot of time on the phone trying to appease both of them, evidently making Sandra upset at one point, then writing 2 separate letters in an effort to set things right again. September 20th, 1991. Sandra, sorry about Nathan. Sometimes he can be a bother to me. Sorry I slipped and said some bad words. Well, as you know, I got grounded. I'm always grounded. So don't call. I'll call you, okay? I will come over whenever I get the chance, so I'll probably write a lot of letters. When I'm grounded, I write a lot of letters. I hate my dad sometimes. He doesn't want me to hang around with Nathan. Sorry you had to hear him yelling. I hate it too. Okay, gotta tell you. I can't hold nothing back from you, Sandra. I went to Melinda's house. She asked me to go back with her. I probably wouldn't have gotten grounded if we didn't stop off at Melinda's. What killed me is I wanted to go with both of you. When do you go to your dad's Friday? Well, if I'm not doing anything and you want me to go, I will, if my dad lets me. Well, I gotta take a shower, be back after I take it. It's 8:45, I'm back. As you can see, that's what I mean when I say I'm confused, because I love you both. Sandra. Hey, girlie, were you mad at me when I let you go? It seemed as you were, because you slammed your phone down. Well, you wanted to know if I'm in love. You think you love me, but deep down, you probably really don't. Like you said, you may never stop liking me. I hope not, because I might have to shoot you up. No, just joking. Don't get me wrong. I like you and everything, but I like Melinda too. But you gotta understand, I knew her a lot longer, about a year. She says the same thing. She says she's in love with me, and she didn't really know till about 2 or 3 months after she knew me. But I'm not saying I wouldn't kiss you. I would love to. I never said I wouldn't make love to you. I don't know what to do. I have 2 beautiful girls who like me, and I don't know what to do. I can't say I love you because I just don't know. I like you. I don't want you to be mad at me. I hope you never stop liking me, because I look forward to a good future with you. Please still like me, okay? Please try to write back or talk to me and tell me what you think. But Sandra, I never want to quit loving you. I think it's sweet you say you love me. I love it when you say I love you in six period. Please don't stop saying it. When her plea to Sandra provided no solid results, Amanda must have had second thoughts about becoming involved. Writing Sandra, she contemplated, hey, if you want to have a relationship, that's a lot, and questioned her about whose big neck chain Sandra was wearing. In the meantime, Amanda's relationship with Melinda started to fade, and Melinda was growing anxious about it. She always writes me letters at school, love letters, and sticks them in my locker. That stopped. And I'm like, what's going on? Melinda said. Things weren't going great. I just noticed this big difference. She wasn't walking me to class. When I would yell for her, she would, with the blonde all the time, I'd say, what's up? Because I knew something. I couldn't take it because she was mine. I molded her. She was my little Mandy, everything I ever wanted. It was like I was obsessed with her. Melinda just couldn't understand. Even though she had found a whole new group to hang around with, people like Carrie Pope and the Leatherberry Brothers, her punker friends were older and more worldly. She never slighted Amanda for their sake. She only saw them when Amanda was grounded or after hours, when Amanda had to be home for curfew. For over a year, she and Amanda had shared so much together. They weren't just lovers, they were best friends. And now Melinda was being totally ignored. She was extremely hurt. She felt betrayed. Before she knew it, Amanda was spending nights over at Shanda's. Melinda and her friend Carrie Pope drove her to buy the place on Capitol Hills one night. She jumped out for a few minutes to talk to Amanda and Sandra in the front yard. When she got back in the car, she told Carrie that the three of them had agreed to be friends. She thought they had reached an understanding. But obviously, Sandra was unmoved by Melinda's requests and demands and met Amanda whenever possible. By the end of September, when it came time for the big school dance, Amanda wrote to both Sandra and Amanda, hoping to take control of the situation. September 27th, 1991. Sandra, hey girl, what's up? I'm in study hall being real bored. Amanda was outside my door, so I played it off and got something to drink. Dumbass teacher. Well, have you decided if you're going to attend the dance? I'm not. I'm probably going to go up to the mall and see a fucking lame movie or something. Well, I'm bored. I've bored you enough, so I'll see you later, babe. Love ya, Melinda. Amanda. I love my hair. It feels so much better. I really don't want to go to the dance, but if you really have to go, I just want to go with you. I don't want you to go without me. We can talk about it Friday at lunch. I really don't want to wait around Friday, so I might go out with Carrie and then have her drop me off at Hazelwood at a certain time. Talk to you later. Love, Melinda. Sandra and Amanda went to the dance at Hazelwood together. When they came out, Melinda was waiting for them. She had Carrie Pope drive her by the schoolyard at just about the time the dance would end. She confronted Amanda and slapped her, then chased Sandra around the building, threatening her, warning her to stay away. The next day at school, Melinda ran to Amanda in tears, begging for a hug in the hallway. Amanda comforted her, but Melinda could tell that the hug wasn't really sincere. Sandra was the only one Amanda cared about. Sandra was feeling her shoes, literally. Melinda thought because Sandra was even starting to dress like her, mimicking her Madonna look. Later that day, Amanda wrote a note explaining and apologizing to Sandra about hugging Melinda. She sent Sandra some poems, asking her not to be mad. Melinda, meanwhile, had taken about as much as she could stand. In her mind, all she had were her looks, and anyone trying to outdo or duplicate, that was a major problem. During the first week in October, she and Sandra had a number of confrontations over it. I mean, Sandra just had this airy attitude about her. I mean, when I would talk to her, she was real, real sweet and nice. She'd just laugh, have fun. She was kiddish, Melinda said. We would rock around, and she would wear real, real tight jeans. She started dressing like me, doing her hair like me to please Amanda, I guess. I would yell at her and threaten her, and would just say stuff like, trying to look like me now, and just so you know. She would get on my nerves, wearing these tight jeans and shaking her butt around school. And Amanda would stare, and I would be right there with Amanda, and that's disrespect to me. Melinda was just about to turn 16 when she was getting tired of playing childish games. One day, when she discovered some torn-up letters from Sandra in Amanda's jacket, she pieced them back together, read them, and threw a fit. You're sick. You're a whore. You're sleeping with a baby, Melinda shrieked, striking Amanda in the face. Finally, Melinda gave her an ultimatum. Amanda, you have to have me or Sandra. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. but Amanda never made a decision, and Melinda was obsessing over the situation. Her sister, Melissa, decided it was time for Melinda to meet someone else, someone who could divert her, with whom she can go out and have a good time. She introduced Melinda to Carrie East, one of her friends, an attractive woman with very short hair, a muscular frame, and a deep voice. Melinda categorized her as a dyke, and she wasn't crazy about that type. Still, East had a new sports car, she came from a nice family, she had money to burn. Melinda decided to give it a shot. She had to do something because her depression was just getting worse. I just tried to escape from Amanda and get her off my mind and go on, but that's why I always played sick. I didn't go to school or nothing, Melinda said. For a minute, Amanda would ignore Sandra and Sandra would get mad. She would slam lockers, get mad because Amanda started to ignore her and pay attention to Melinda. Amanda knew she was losing me, so therefore she would put roses in my locker and put notes and try to talk to me, and I would just ignore her like she was not there and keep walking. Keep stepping and say something smart like, go on to Sandra or something. When Melinda spent her time being wined and dined by East, going to fancy restaurants, going out driving and drinking, Amanda and Sandra grew much tighter. Amanda was regularly inviting Sandra to spend the night, saying, I love you, in many of her letters. And the two girls developed their own secret code, their own language that no one could decipher, should any of their letters be found. For example, they both started writing the number 23 on the bottom of their notes. On October 7th, she wrote a note explaining her fear about getting close to someone again. She didn't want to get hurt. I've been thinking a lot about that letter, she told Sandra, and I do believe it. It's just I'm scared to get in a relationship. It's an undated letter, and Amanda described her predicament more fully. Sandra, hey, honey, your cousin seems to really care about you. That's good. She's sweet. Tell her I said hi, okay? My feelings for you are getting stronger and stronger each day. I know sometimes it may seem like I don't give a damn about you, like I don't even know you. It's just I'm scared of treating you the wrong way. I just don't want to do something wrong and fuck us up. Right now, I just don't know about relationships with anyone because I already got hurt in one. Plus, we haven't even gone together for that long. I didn't ask Melinda to go steady with me until about 6 or 9 months after we had been going together. You know, I do really care about you. It's just a mix of emotions. In a way, I still love Melinda. I think I always will. I think that's something that will never change about me. So I guess you will have to grow to love me like that. I mean, I still get jealous over Melinda when she talks with other people. I'm just not over her yet. It will take a while because love takes time. If you think you can wait it out, it will prove how much you really love me. But deep down inside, it's like maybe. Sorry, my cat just messed me up. But deep down inside, it's like maybe you're only doing this because it's something new. There's one big question I need to ask you. I know sex is fun, but how come you want to have it every time I'm over there? Love's not about sex. Well, it helps, but love is loving someone for who they are and not for what they're capable of doing in bed. Well, I really gotta go. Love ya, Amanda Hervin. The more serious Amanda's friendship with Sandra became, the more problems and fights there were at school. Amanda was becoming aware of the depth of Melinda's obsession. Sandra, hey honey. Yes, I do love you, but it just feels like Melinda has got me in some kind of trance. I don't know how to get out of it. I'm scared. If I try to get out, something bad will happen. I'm scared to death. Love ya, Amanda. Sometime during all of this in the month of October, Melinda became so distraught that she felt compelled to have a talk with Edwin Elmers, the assistant principal at Hazelwood. Even though Elmers was a middle-aged man and someone she hardly knew, she needed someone to talk to about her problems. Melinda came to me one day in the hall, and she said she wanted to talk to me. And I asked her what was the problem, and she told me she wanted to talk about her mother, that her mother would not accept her, Elmers explained. Behind closed doors, Melinda told Mr. Elmers that she liked girls, that she was gay. She was concerned because her parents didn't understand her. And Elmers' 20-year experience as assistant principal, it was the first time he had ever heard anything like that. Elmers didn't know how to handle the situation. He gave Melinda a book on interracial dating and then called Melinda's mother, who came in and confided that they were already in professional counseling. Elmers let the situation drop. So just by reading this, that was the end of the chapter. But just by reading this, it's obviously clear that these girls have much more bigger problems, and it's, I mean, you almost kind of feel bad for them in a way, because they don't know any better, and this is how they think that things are going to either be resolved by threatening people, or it's just, you got to remember how you were when you were, you know, 12 to 16, even 17. Your mind was just not mature enough to handle situations that, you know, just adult situations like this. And for, I don't know, just reading this and then listening to some of the things that they say, even the letters that were being written back and forth, it's very apparent that these are kids that think that they're adults and have no well supervision, even though I've seen interviews with Sandra's mom, and she says, you know, she did have discipline in the house, but I don't know. It kind of makes me wonder what kind of discipline and what, I mean, obviously she didn't know anything about her daughter at one point. And that's one of the reasons I want to dive into this whole book. And once I'm finished with it, we'll do a nice little summary and chapter. But anyway, I'm tired. I had food poisoning yesterday, so I had to get up enough strength to read that. So until next week, see ya.